Alrighty, it's hour number two of the Bob Tuscan Show. We're continuing our interview tonight with Ryan Dawson, author of the new book, The Separation of Business and State. And Ryan, we've covered a lot of ground so far, and we're going to continue to do so this hour. And we're going to talk about solutions this hour because, you know, we could talk about the problems, and it's important to address what issues we have and to get to the root of these issues. That's step one. But then the next step in this progression here is to say, well, what are we going to do about it?
Right. What do we do about it? Well, I'll give you some solutions. I'll just fire some out. Like, you know, people get really frustrated because they say, can we really politically vote someone in with a moral conscience? And even if you do get one, like Ron Paul type of person, they're usually there by themselves, vote no on all the bills. And it doesn't really matter because everyone else is corrupt. And I would say that's not going to come for a long time, a political solution like that. But we do have other means at our disposal to change laws and lessen corruption on through different methods. One example is the power of referendum, which we saw in Colorado and Washington. You can get a referendum on the ballot and have direct democracy work in action, so you can skirt the Congress critters and have the people vote on something directly, like the legalization of marijuana, and you can overturn the laws like that with the power of referendum. And it doesn't have to be only about drugs. You can have referendums about many things, but I think it's a really underutilized method for people to take some power back and have a direct say in their government without having to go through these corporate bribe shills. And so I think that would be something worth to doing over the internet, is to organize good referendums. And whether it be regulatory laws or in some kind of reform on one thing I'd like to do with police, for example, is I think that when a cop is sued or for the horrible things that they do, shooting people and stealing property and all the things that cops are involved in, that the money shouldn't come out of the state. That should come right out of their own pension funds, so that the cops feel the sting themselves, because it's really not punishing them if you're making other people pay, actually literally pay for their crimes. I think that should come out of the police own pension fund. Then maybe cops wouldn't all have this brotherly, we're all in on it together, we never tattle on each other thing, because then when one of them screwed up, it hurts the pension fund for the whole police force. I don't think they would be so willing to protect them anymore. And I don't think they would be as willing to go screw around, because right now they have no consequence. And there have to be consequences. The same thing with banking institutions. The original creator of a loan, for example, should, let's have them liable for at least 10% if there's a default, regardless of how many parties that loan is sold to or passed on to, third, fourth, fifth party, doesn't matter. The original creator must have some sort of moral hazard, must have some sort of risk involved. However, I'd like to bring back Glass-Steagall. I don't think that ever should have been repealed. It's ridiculous to separate investment banks and lending institutions, because the lending institutions could just loan out as many subprime loans as they wanted, sell them to the investment banks, and then it was no longer a burden to them whether or not the people pay the mortgages or not, because that would be in the hands of the investment bank. And the investment bank passed it on, too, by getting the rating agencies to bribe about their CDOs, and you know they keep passing these toxic CDOs and assets around, securities, not assets, until whoever's the last person holding the bucket gets the shaft, and they all got bailed out. That never should have happened. But people are scared of regulations, and usually regulations are horrid because they're made by a government, but they're not categorically bad. There are bad regulations, and there's times where we definitely should deregulate, but there are also good regulations. There are some necessary ones. It's just they're not being written by the right people. They're usually written by the corporations themselves. But we can, through power of referendum, and if we protest it enough, we can enact some sort of accountability to the banking institution or whatever it is we want to choose, through education, healthcare, etc. And I have little plans for each of those of what could be done. Healthcare, especially, there are other countries with working models to emulate. The problem is we have to really push that issue and separate all the disinformation out from both universal health care or free market health care, because we have neither one. And that is a false dichotomy to act like our health care is anything resembling a free market or universal health care. It is not. It's a privately for-profit, publicly traded institutions who are writing the bills for themselves, and the government is actively causing the cost of healthcare to go up on its own because they, for example, they won't let Medicare negotiate prices down with drug companies. So what happens? They charge as much as they can. And so that's a regulation we have to fix. That regulation's a horrible regulation. And there should be consequences for the people who vote on these things. The problem is the public doesn't know who voted on these things or that such an act even occurred because journalists don't report it. And so we've absolutely got to fix the media first. If we can fix the media, it's pretty easy to fix all these other things. People are upset. When they wanted to bomb Syria, that was very clear. And everybody, 1,000 to 1, called into Congress and said no. And they didn't bomb Syria. But when it comes to healthcare, it's so complicated for most people that they don't really know who to call or what to say. But I think with this book, they'll have that information and ammo, and they'll know directly what we need to be doing. And there aren't any quick fixes. I mean, the solutions are difficult. It's not, there's not like, oh, just do X and it'll all work. No, we had to put some work into it. But there are available solutions through these regulatory reforms as well as the power referendum. And then there's also the running local and actually running for office and using the ballot box. That's another method. Local government has a lot more power than people realize, but it usually just is a kind of good old boy network where the same families are running the town all the time because everyone's so disinterested in government. But we should be getting more involved, and I think we can be. And I think there are ways to finance it now that didn't exist in the past, because of the access and power of the internet.
It's a double-edged sword because although we have so much power with the internet, it's also a vacuum, and it fills up with so much fluff so that if you're not looking for the truth, if you're not looking for the good info, you're not going to find it. You're just going to find your Dancing with the Stars reruns and your fuzzy kitties on YouTube and Twitter
Yeah,
account or
here's a
whatever.
cat chasing a bag. You do have your
Yeah.
idiocracy thing, but I would say as the economy continues to get worse, more and more people care who didn't care before. When Joe Sixpack gets off the couch, you're in trouble. Like when you finally cross that line where people really feel the effects of inflation. I mean, they're lying about inflation. They say it's 1%. That's absolute BS. That's government numbers for you. They lie about unemployment. They're using the U3 or U6 numbers, which are a joke, because all they do is categorize it in such a way to where it only includes the last 90 days or so, or whatever they want to have the cutoff point. And all the people who are unemployed longer than that do not count as unemployed, even though they're still unemployed. And inflation, they're not using the consumer price index, they're using their own made up numbers, and they exclude food and gas and all these things that definitely ought to be included. And so that, people are literate. We've pretty much wiped out illiteracy down, and we're about 98% literate or so, but everybody is enumerate. And it's a shame in the public school system that calculus is the main like focus in math rather than statistics. People should all know statistics and how that works, because that's very empowering when you understand how people manipulate and lie with numbers. And inflation's more like 7%, not 1%. And I think as people are pushed at the grocery store and at the gas pump, that all these people who were never political in the past, and they're out there watching, what was it, Dancing with the Stars and the whatever the cool thing is on TV, I don't know, but whatever it is, they start to say, hey, why is my grocery bill so high? How come I can't fill up my car? What's going on with my money? And they get angry, and it's easy enough to direct them I had to say, look, this is who you need to vote for. This is what you, who you need to not vote for, not support. And it's got to start local. I'd like to win federal
It
elections, but I
does.
don't think that's really realistic. I
I
think,
like that.
and we
Let's
always
leave this
aim at that.
segment.
We always aim at, let's get the president. And like, that's
Sure,
not going to
but
happen.
that doesn't work. And
No, it
we'll leave
doesn't.
this segment on that note and come back in just seconds. All right, welcome back to the Bob Tuscan Show. So, all this faith in politicians saving us and the government saving us, it's not exactly the best method to deal with things, folks. And that's the
No.
bottom line, right, Ryan?
You've got the power of your own purchasing power. That's right. Like, rather than trying to get the government to outlaw, oh, GMO or McDonald's or whatever, you can just stop eating it and don't go there. I mean, that's the quickest way to end any kind of product is not to shop at those places. I mean, you don't need a law or anything. You can do that right now. Just don't ever go to McDonald's again if that's your thing. If you like McDonald's, go to McDonald's. But I'm just saying as an example. If there's something out there that you can't stand, then don't buy it and try to get others not to buy it. You have that always had the power to boycott. And you can make a massive dent. I mean, even if it's only 10%, if somebody's stock goes down 10%, guess what happens? Everyone gets out of it and it tumbles. So there are ways to do your own kind of fighting through what you decide to buy and not buy. And if you enough people support, let's say, organic food or something, and there's a market for it, then a market will arise. And you've just, created competition. And if there's a market for alternative media and it can thrive, then that market will be fulfilled. And you will have alternative media, legit alternative media, independent media. There's a lot of spookadoo, fear-mongering sensationalism out there too. But there are still enough people who reject that nonsense and reject the nonsense on the corporate media as well to have shows like Bob Tuscan or myself. And slowly that is growing. And as we take back the media, that's sort of a meta issue because you absolutely have to have media or people don't even know what to fight for. They don't even know how they're getting screwed. So we've really got to really support independent journalists because that's kind of where it starts, and
I
then they
agree.
can help you fight locally.
Well, obviously I agree. But
Well,
I
yeah, you
wonder
wouldn't be doing it
sometimes.
if you didn't know that already, but yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I wonder sometimes, what if they the powers that shouldn't be, what if they pull out their internet kill switch? How would that change things?
That would be awful. And actually, that's something the FCC is presently working on now, trying to throttle net neutrality and offer the kind of fast lane for those who can pay for the fast lane. But there are a lot of corporations that are against that too, because right now they have an equal lane with everyone else anyway. And suddenly they're going to have to pay for a fast lane. The only ones that want to pay for the fast lane are the ones who can't compete with those who would be pushed in the slow lane. Those who have nothing really to offer other than they have more money than you do and they want to maintain their status. But given the even playing field, they can't catch up. And so you have some corporations that are for it, some against it. And of course, all the little men are against it. But the FCC is currently trying to do that. Now, if they have, they're not going to kill the internet because people would lose their minds. But what they can do is throttle and slow down and lag parts of it enough to give the advantage to the fast lanes so that the direction of the internet will move that way in favor of the people who toe the line. And that is something that they are doing. But it's very hard to implement because one country can do what they want on their side of the internet and other countries will say, no, we're not going to do that. So it's really hard to kill the internet. And we saw with the PIPA and SOPA and those bills that even Google and Wiki and large sites came out on the side of the of good for their own interests. It was the right thing for the wrong reason per se, but they came out and fought against it. So we do have allies in keeping the internet free. There's a lot of commerce on the internet, and it's really hard for politicians to censor the internet for political content because there isn't really a way to do that without also interrupting the commercial content. And so
And
commerce
you know,
wins usually.
the greatest example of a country having to deal with this is China. And
Right.
China has tried to censor the internet. People will get proxies and go around their gate. It's very interesting to see how
But it's
internet
not
is.
automatic. It's something we have to always constantly fight for.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
don't take that for granted that you have access on the internet. And I mean, just yesterday I tried to upload El Gran Tabu on YouTube, and of course it got shafted. The official reason was for length, even though it's only 38 minutes. Yet I uploaded a video today that was 1 hour and 45 minutes with Doug Valentine, and I uploaded a video the day before that I did in an interview about 9/11, and I had one with David Cole that was about 2 hours long. So obviously it wasn't really the length, it was the content. That's why they censored it. But then there's Vimeo and other ways around that. As YouTube continues to censor and act like a brat, people move on to other social networking sites and other video share sites, which is exactly what I did. That's the beauty of a market and a free market. As long as you have a free market, the market will be there if there's competition, because it's in their own interest to have it.
Absolutely. Ryan, there's a lot we have not gotten into in the book. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Ryan Dawson, who has a new book, The Separation of Business and State. We've touched on healthcare a bit, but let's go ahead and take that on. Being in Japan, you have a different perspective on this, perhaps. What's your take on the Barry Sotero care?
Well, I do have a different take from being in Japan. I actually had a pulled hamstring in the US, and I had the same injury in Japan. I paid $28 in Japan. I paid about $600 in the United States, even with insurance. And people always want to play around with the portions of how much is out of pocket versus how much is from insurance or from your employer or from the government or whatever. That really doesn't matter. It doesn't, if it's $28, it doesn't matter if it came from taxes or it came from my boss or it came right out of my pocket, because it's only $28. When it's $600, that's when it matters, how much came from where. It's the total cost of procedure and drugs that make the difference in healthcare. If it wasn't so expensive for the total cost, we could pay for it with taxes, or we could pay out of pocket. Both systems would work, because it, and we did back in the 50s. We pay right out of pocket, and you had insurance too. But you, it didn't cost hundreds of dollars to get an X-ray, and I'm not just talking about inflation either. I mean, it just doesn't cost as much. There's no nothing within the procedure intrinsically that warrants a bill for thousands of dollars for a sonogram. $1,000 sonogram. In Japan, they're free, but were you to pay for them, they would be about $20. And Japan's currency is even with the dollar right now. It has nothing to do with it. It's only $20. And so, though they have universal health care, even if you did have to pay, you could. If you have a baby, you can go see your baby, or depending on your belief, the process of your baby being made whenever you want. But in America, if you're on Medicaid or something, you get the minimal, like two pictures and you're done. And if you want to see more, you got to pay more. But they're like $1,000 a pop, and even more if depending on which state you live in. And so it's the total cost of procedure that is the root of that issue, not how much comes from taxes or how much comes from the individual or the insurance companies. It's the total cost. And you say, well, why are the costs so high in America and not all these other places? And as the theme of the book will tell you, why? Because the government of go always government has a reverse Midas touch. Everything they touch doesn't turn into gold. It turns into something else that's brown and smells bad. That's basically what government does. Everything they get involved in. Healthcare, they make it more expensive. Education, they made it more expensive. They're guaranteeing student loans. So what happens? Tuition goes up. Duh. I mean, it's really simple to see, but they're just lost on economics 101. And we've got to get government out. And there are multiple solutions for healthcare. There's a There's a free market method, there's a universal healthcare method, and either one would be heaven compared to what the US has now. Healthcare is the largest single reason for debt and indirectly even death in the United States. More than mortgages for houses, more than war, more than anything, it's the cost of healthcare. Especially if someone in your family gets cancer, just you lose everything. People are paying tens of thousands of dollars if they get sick or hurt. People are avoiding the hospital and trying to fix themselves at their houses because they know how much it's going to cost if they go to the hospital. And I would argue, and I argued in the book, and I'm very libertarian and I'm very pro-free market, but I think there's an exception with healthcare. Not all of it. And when you talk about cosmetics and things like that, where prices are going down because people do have a choice and there are market pressures, then the market works. But I think when you have an emergency, whether that's from a car accident, like an injury or disease or whatever, you just go to the closest hospital there is. You don't really sit in the emergency room and say, I don't
That's
really
right.
like this one. I want to go over to this other
It's
emergency
a
room.
traumatic event, and then you need to get help now.
Yeah, it's
And
not a commodity.
we'll be right back in just a second,
It's
Ryan,
not
and
like
we'll cover
buying
more of
shoes or a
this.
t-shirt, you know, it's
Don't
not
go
the
anywhere.
same.
Okay, we got two more segments to go with Ryan Dawson tonight, and we still have a lot of ground to cover. I keep saying that. They just gotta get the book, man. Gotta
Yeah,
get the
just get the
book.
book. Well, I was talking about a free market fail. I know that's going to make a lot of people mad, but look, your health is not a choice, really. I mean, everyone chooses health. I'll just be sick and die. No one's going to say that. You can choose not to buy a pair of shoes. You can choose not to buy an article of clothing or to get a different article from a different store or something. And you have that market pressure and competition. But when it comes to a hospital in your life, you just go to the closest one available and you pay whatever it costs. You don't have time to shop around. You can't, oh, I'm going to go over to this other hospital. Like, you can't. If when your life's in danger or someone you know, whatever, you just have to pay whatever it is. And so the normal market forces of competition and choice that are alive when you're getting some kind of good, whether it's food or clothing or a house or whatever, you have the ability to shop around. There is competition, but that does not exist in the emergency type of situation for severe injury or disease. And so I don't think you can just say, well, the market will work it out. Like, we actually, there's an extra layer there, and we have to drive down the cost of procedures. And then people can argue about which is better between a universal healthcare system, a single health payer type, or paying out of pocket and putting on layaway or whatever. All of them would work, actually, as long as we can drive the total cost down. And doctors and nurses would still be able to have the pay that they have. It's just that insurance companies and drug companies would lose some money, but they're literally exploiting death. And I don't have any sympathy for companies that profit off of pain. I mean, insurance companies, they want healthy people to pay. They don't want to give you insurance if you actually have
Right.
problems. They don't want to help you
Yep.
because you're a liability to them. And so it's the market standing on its head. It's more cost efficient for you to be hurt and sick. I mean, we're never going to have health so long as sickness is a profit opportunity. And that's why when you allow that and the regulations that are there to be the way they are in the US anyway, then that's how you end up with the worst case scenario. A lot of other countries who have lost wars, they have universal health care because it was just necessary. You had to. There were so many injured, so many hurt. But the US has never really had its cities bombed. It's never been in the same situation as Japan or Germany or the UK. And so it never got on that boat. And it's really sad. It's really sad to see Americans afraid to go on an ambulance or afraid to go to the hospital because they got to choose between living or being broke. And gosh, it's really tragic because there are simple solutions that have been enacted all over the world, and not only from first world nations, people who are a lot poorer than the United States who have superior systems. but people are so afraid of socialism and this and that label. And I don't think the problem has really been addressed about why the total cost is as high as it is. And I explain why it is as high as it is in the book and what we ought to do about it, what I think are some options. And if someone else has some other options, I'm open, but I laid out my solutions to that in the chapter.
Very, very interesting stuff, folks. Ryan Dawson is our guest tonight on the Bob Tuscan Show. We're going to do another show in the future about the Holocaust because you and I had touched base about that off air.
You talking about American Indians or no?
All of them, all of the
Yeah.
Holocaust.
That's the
No,
name. There have
there's
been
only
many,
one
many
Holocaust,
genocides.
Ryan.
Well,
There's only
yeah.
one Holocaust,
Only
okay?
one
And
genocide is called the Holocaust,
the
but
Holocaust, okay? And we'll get into that. That should be a show to look forward to, ladies and gentlemen. And there's just a lot of things that
I
we
made a
bring
movie
Ryan on
about
for.
that, you know.
You did.
Yeah. More Than Taboo. It's on Vimeo, it's not on YouTube. And it was actually a collaboration of Bradley Smith and David Cole and lots of people in that made helped make that, but I was the main editor and narrator.
Yeah, and I got to get Bradley Smith on as well because he really knows his stuff. And I want to thank you for putting me in touch with David Cole because that was just a fascinating discussion we had.
I was happy to promote him, and I've recommended him to other shows, and he's doing it, so I'm glad to see that. And Bradley Smith, I know him too. If you want to interview him, I can hook you up there. He made a film called El Gran Tabú, which
Yes.
total coincidence that I had More Than Taboo in English and he had the Great Taboo in Spanish
And
at the
actually,
Mexican
David
Film
Cole
Festival.
made it for him,
Well, he
if
was
I'm
the
not
editor
mistaken.
for that. Yeah, he was the
Right,
editor
yeah.
for that. Secretly, yeah.
Secretly. Yeah, that was before. That was in his David Stein days. And that film really discussed the fact that it's illegal to talk about the Holocaust in a way contrary to
Yeah.
the official story.
And Aunt Zundel, poor Aunt Zundel, had his house firebombed and everything else. But yeah, that movie's up on Vimeo, El Gran Tabú, and maybe you can link to it. It's on my site also. And
I
I just
posted
think
it
of
on my
freedom of
site.
speech, you know, like I don't care. Like even if someone wanted to say Elvis is still alive, like, that's ridiculous, but you shouldn't go to jail for it, you know? Like you could say anything. If you want to deny African slavery, you'd look like an absolute idiot, but I don't think you need to actually like be put behind bars, you know? Like it's not going to hurt anybody, you're just going to be stupid. And not that I say questioning World War II is stupid. I'm just saying even if it was dumb, why do you go to jail? If you
It's a good
question
question.
9/11, are you going to go to jail?
I
Like
was just going to say that. Could you imagine if they tried to make questioning 9/11 a crime?
well, I'd be in jail.
I think most of us would be in jail right now.
But every war, I mean, every war you see, I know this doesn't have anything to do with the book, but that's okay. The Civil War, well, when I interviewed David, I brought up the example of the first Gulf War with the babies on incubators myth. If you went today and said, you know, that was a PR firm, Hill & Knowlton, that coached the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, Natalia, to give a speech about the Iraqis coming in and killing babies and Kuwaiti ba and throwing them out of the incubators, and it was made up. Which is true, it was made up. And then they started the first Gulf War anyway and killed 100,000 Iraqis in the Highway of Death, etc. And if you really were caring about babies on incubators, how about the 500,000 Iraqi children that ended up dying from sanctions? But I'm digressing. But if you were to point out that the babies on incubators pretext was in fact a lie, I don't think anyone would come out and say, you just hate Kuwaitis or you're just pro Saddam Hussein. They wouldn't do that. But if you question World War II in the same way and say, I think this particular thing is false, though well, you just hate Jews or you're just pro Hitler, which is nonsense. You don't hate Jews and you're not pro Hitler, you're pro truth. And there are a lot of things that are incorrect in wars, death tolls, etc. Every war, every single war, has revision to see because there's a lot of propaganda during war, especially from the winning side. So, do you really think only 100,000 people died when the nuclear bomb hit Hiroshima, when all these cities in Japan or in most of Asia are packed with millions of people, you really think it was only 100,000 people? A surprise bomb that killed everything in one half a second? Really? Can you really back that figure up? No, you can't. And so there are some parts of the war where the numbers are too low, some parts where it's too high, something. It's always to be open to revision. And as long as you have historians and you have a nice back and forth argument, and you can hash these things out. But to have a subject that's just taboo, that just automatically, this is what it is, and if you say otherwise, you go to jail, means probably the side that needs to throw people in jail cannot back itself up.
Yeah, that's right. It makes no sense whatsoever, ladies and gentlemen. And there's several good pieces on that to check out and look at the Ernst Sundell case. I think that's probably the most shocking of cases.
And I don't even like him as a person, but I agree with his right to say what he says. And I can't really refute his work. I mean, personally, whatever. But the man's like 75 years old and sitting in jail still. But we'll do a show on that. We'll definitely come back around to that.
All right, we have one more segment to go, and we will do so with Ryan Dawson in just a moment here. Let's see, what do we want to finish off with? We've touched on just about everything, man. Is there a piece here that we really should take on before we head out for tonight?
I really like the Pentagon chapter, but I think like the chapter on agriculture and energy, people go, oh, that's boring, but not really, because it gets all into thorium and these Fukushima.
That's the basis of all life is, I mean, agriculture and energy. So let's finish off with that tonight. They'll have to get the book to read the rest. We'll be right back. It's the Bob Tuscan Show. Ryan Dawson is our guest tonight. Final segment coming up in just seconds.
We could have done Gods and Gays because it's hilarious, but it's all right.
All right, here we go. Wow, that's certainly gone by fast. We're finishing off our interview tonight with Ryan Dawson. Ryan, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man.
Hey, I thank you for plugging my book, because that ebook basically finances my films and the other online activity that I do. And I think it's a good book. For $4.99, you get a book. And if you're like me, because I don't like ebooks, I like paper books. I'm old school. I want some paper, but you know, you spend another dollar in ink or so, and you can print the whole thing, staple it together, and voila, you have a paper book for $4.99. It's like 260 pages or something, depending on their formatting or whatever. Yeah.
It's awesome. The only problem I have with the book is I don't know how to read.
Oh, well, so. You must have gone to public school.
Exactly. And we're going to wrap things
up. Hold on. There's a great, I wish I had gotten an education. We can talk about whatever, but there's a comedian that talks about the 5-minute university.
You were telling me about this.
It's hilarious. It's Father something or other. He's a priest too. Father Garcia something. Anyway, that is a really fun little clip that you can probably find online. I'm sorry, I don't know his whole name, but he did the 5-minute university, and he just did a little stint on his 5-minute university based on what college graduates remember 5 years after they've graduated. And he got into foreign language, which is basically all they remember are introductions, and that's it. And what they learned in economics, what they learned about business.
Education, I think it don't matter where you go.
Oh, you've got it.
Italy, America, Brazil, it's all the same. It's all just memorization. And it don't matter how long you can remember anything, just so you can pair it at the back for the test. And I got this idea for a school I would like to start. Something called the 5-minute university. And the idea is that in 5 minutes, you learn what the average college graduate remembers 5 years after he or she's out of school. Would the cost of like $20? That might seem like a lot of money, $20 just for 5 minutes. But that's for like a tuition, cap and gown rental, graduation picture, snacks, everything. Everything included. You know, like in college, you have to take foreign language. Well, at the 5-minute university, you can have your choice. Any language you want, you can take it. Say if you want to take Spanish, what I teach you is, ¿cómo está usted? That means, how are you? And the answer is, muy bien, means very well. And believe me, if you took 2 years of college Spanish, 5 years after you're out of school, como está usted muy bien, about all you're going to remember.
And you hear the applause there because they're laughing nervously, but there are people who took 2 years of Spanish or 2 years of French, and basically all they remember is how to say, how are you? I'm fine. What's your name? And basic introductions, which is something for me I've learned in Japan too, from observing this with people learning English, that people remember what they use. And probably in their Spanish class, French class, German class, in the beginning, they got to say, como te apa tu, or they got to use their French or their Spanish. And then afterward, they spent a lot of time conjugating verbs and learning ER and IR verbs and all that, and doing a lot of written work and writing, but they didn't get to speak anymore. And part of the problem is because of the class size and just the whole design of it. But when they're out, the only part they remember long term, speaking wise, is what they actually got to speak. And they only got to speak the first few days, and so they might as well have only taken the language for a few days, because they spent months learning grammatical, technical stuff, which is just not how you learn a language. Look at any little kid, bilingual child, or anybody. They can't read, they can't write, yet they can speak whatever language you teach them. They don't learn grammar. It's the other way around. You learn through customization first, and then through a large pool of examples, you deduce what the grammar is. You don't induce it. You don't learn the grammar and like mathematics and then work your way up into your sentences and think. You learn the sentences, and then you figure out what the rules are second. That's why it's an art. It's not a science. And I really do not like the way foreign languages are taught in school. I think they waste an enormous amount of time. And I could teach somebody a foreign language, if it's one of the languages I know, I could teach them what they would learn in school and retain in about 5 minutes, like the comedian said. There are just far better ways to learn a foreign language. There are far better ways to learn history. But we don't really have these engaging processes in education unless it's private school or a tutor, because of the burdens that are put on the teacher and the class sizes and the tests that they have to regurgitate and pass and the standardized tests and things are really hurting education. And I think it's on purpose. I agree with George Carlin. Always, you know, just make them smart enough to run the machines and be obedient, and that's about, and read the road signs, and that's good enough.
In our final portion of tonight's show, let's talk about energy and agriculture. What do Absolutely. You discuss in that chapter?
It was like, well, why do they relate? Well, of course they do. The U.S., for example, had a stint for a while where they're using corn. They're converting corn into ethanol, 10% of it. And that's because of the corn. A lot of Midwest states are growing government-subsidized corn. That's why we have corn syrup and everything. And so they decided, here's another use for corn. We can make ethanol out of it. But it's like a 1 to 1.1 ratio of return. It's a horrible, horrible crop to turn into ethanol. Brazil's doing it with sugarcane. A little bit better. But the energy and agriculture are intrinsically related. But we have, in Japan especially, a huge scare against nuclear power, because of the tsunami which wrecked the conventional uranium plants in Fukushima. And that has been greatly exaggerated, and it has also been greatly covered up. There's two extreme camps on that, but that's a separate issue. But there are technologies out there for nuclear power that have nothing to do with uranium or plutonium or any of these toxic, high-pressure, high-water, very volatile systems, which are basically just creating steam. And one of them is thorium. And there's a man named Kirk Sorensen, and does a TED talk on thorium. Just do thorium, like Thor, Mighty Thor from Marvel, lightning god, or Norse mythology. Thorium TED talk, and check that out real quick. And you know, it's low pressure, and there's just so many advantages, and it's been around, and we actually used to have a thorium plant in the 70s under Carter, and after the Three Mile Island accident, which was totally unrelated to thorium because that was a uranium plant, it got killed, and it got killed for political reasons, not scientific reasons. And I went into the debacle Hal Nixon botched the potential for thorium too. But people have to see that the green energy and things that they worship, wind and sun and so on, it sounds nice, and it's nice and hippie and clean sound, natural sounding, and you know, natural is good and all, but it just doesn't really do a dent in energy. It just does not compare to fossil fuels, but thorium does, and I am selling people on thorium. Thorium has the advantages of uranium, plutonium without the drawbacks.
And interesting.
The problem is you cannot build a bomb out of it.
I'm going to have to look into that some more. I'm going to have to read the chapter in your book, The Separation of Church and State. No, I'm joking.
Business and state, separation. Yeah. Well, both, separation. Actually, yeah. Church is a business, so.
It is, especially Judaism, but that's a different story.
Well, they're all businesses.
Ryan, yeah, man. Thanks so much for coming on tonight, man.
Oh, absolutely. I hope people got an interest in the book or the ebook. You get it instantly from Smashwords, smashwords.com, Ryan Dawson, $4.99. And even if you're not going to read it, give me the $4.99 so that I can continue to do the podcast and the movies like War by Deception and so on.
I hear
you. You know, that it's a donation to me, but you get something out of it.
Or give Ryan $2.50 and give me the other $2.50.
Right? There you go. You know what? I will set you up that if you get the book through Bob's site, if you go to the Bob Tuscan site, 10% off.
All right, conspiracy theory. All right, Ryan, thanks again, man.
Excellent. Thank you.